just because you have people coming into your community or your subscription doesn't mean that it's working. Like, you need to make, like, see, like, how long are they staying? And, you know, are they getting value from it? And if not, then maybe it's something that you need to either, you know, dig into more, or you need to pull the plug.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. This is episode 585, and we are talking about community strategy. And by we, I have brought a special guest along, Diana Tower from dianatower.com, who is a community strategist. Welcome to the call.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you are a Canadian in Spain.
That is correct. Well, actually, I would say I was from Calgary, Alberta, but I was born in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. And my father was in the military, so we moved around quite a fair bit, but I have settled down in the south of Spain.
That would be one hell of an address to put on a envelope.
I know, right? It's like, originally from here.
What is it? Moose Jaw.
Yeah, Moose Jaw, and then Saskatchewan. Sasquatch. Yeah, it's one of those, I don't even think I could spell it. Like, if you tested me right now, I probably could not spell it without having to look it up. It's a weird spelling.
So, you're in Spain and you are helping people with their communities, which is highly interesting to me, having been running a couple of communities for near on a decade, not quite. But a lot of my customers have communities, and people who listen to this particular show are super savvy when it comes to communities. It's almost certain we have a high density of people with Facebook groups, private memberships, and I think we could probably cover some interesting ground for someone who's maybe not even got a membership yet or a Facebook group, which is something you sound like you specialize in. So it'd be good to cover a few of those topics today. What do you think?
That sounds fantastic. And I think, like, a couple things to even start with. So, like, if we're starting with people that maybe don't have a community yet, or they're not really sure how to get their feet wet, like, the first thing I want to kind of knock out there is that this idea of having a free Facebook group to, like, kind of kickstart your business, it's actually something I kind of disagree with, just because sort of the back end of community, the management and all of the strategy that goes into it, it takes a fair amount of time. And so, you know, when somebody's just starting out, they might think, oh, I'm going to start a free Facebook group so that I can magically grow my list and sell out my webinars or my flagship programs. And, you know, it'll be easy. And I think that there's this misconception on, you know, the idea of, like, I can just slap up a free Facebook group and, you know, Pied Piper all these people into my sales funnel, or, you know, sell people from this type of group. And it's just really, it's not that easy in terms of, like, making a quality group that people are actually going to appreciate. So I would say, like, the first thing to recommend is, you know, if you haven't set up, you know, a free Facebook group, like, hold off on that and really focus on, you know, a membership group that's going to add value to your paying clients, because those are the people that you really want to pay attention to and add your most value to. And then it depends on, there's different stages. I know that if you're just starting out, you probably don't have, you know, the funds to pay a community manager, or even have a community strategist support that community manager. So that's sort of when you want to set the foundation of a group so that you can manage it yourself in the beginning. And then, you know, from there, what you're probably going to do is you're going to be growing, and then you're going to realize that, okay, I need to offhand this to somebody else. And so the idea of, like, hiring a community manager, like, how do you do that? And then from there, making sure that that community manager is actually coming from a place of, you know, obviously caring for the people that are in there, but then also coming from a place from, like, a strategic perspective. Like, how are you actually triggering engagement? Are you using your time wisely? Because the number one mistake people make when they're sort of managing a community is that they feel like they need to be directly involved in it in order for it to be engaged, quote unquote. And it's just not true. It's, you can set up systems and you can set up sort of processes behind the scenes that can make your community be engaged, but not have you as the host be directly involved.
It's kind of the first thing that people ask is, how can they step away from it?
Exactly.
You know, I must say, you know, it's interesting to me. This is a very interesting topic. Probably the big point of difference that has served me well is that I turn up in my own community. I've probably been one of the people banging the drum saying, you know what, if you've got this custodianship of hundreds of people, the least you could do is show up occasionally. And I was kind of driven by, there's some famous bloggers who turn off their comments and they don't respond to comments because they, it's like they don't really care.
Right.
They just want to create and post stuff. And then all these gurus come along and sell courses and create this. It's kind of like a tick the box. You get access to this member's private Facebook group.
Right.
And you never see them or hear from them. Yep. And I do hear people complain about it. It was actually my complaint. And that's what founded my membership in the first place, on this idea that when no one would sit down beside me and show me what they're actually doing or listen to me or point me in the right direction, I was able to do that for other people. So how do you set up systems and processes for the owner to step away? I'm super interested in that.
First of all, like what you're talking about as well is like a really high quality community. The fact that I think the main thing is setting the expectation as well. So like if you're inviting people into a community and you're sort of not pretending, or you're saying that, oh, it's like my community, like I'm the host and I'm the face of the community and I'm going to be in the community. But then if that person isn't there, you're failing to meet expectation. And it's not like people are going to be upset. They're going to feel a little bit cheated. They're going to be like, what is this? Like, why isn't this person present? And so like one of the keys in the beginning is to really set expectations. And also as a host of a community, to set sort of boundaries for yourself. Like I've actually been working with Selena Sue and her flagship course for Impacting Millions. And one thing that she has is like, she wants to, obviously, like she really cares about her members. And, you know, that shines through in everything that she does. But she also wants to balance this idea that, you know, she has other coaching, she has mastermind, there's other levels of connecting with her. And so sometimes what will happen is, you know, and this happens with a lot of different, you know, business owners when they create a community that goes with a course, is that they will put too much energy into it. Like they're always, you know, replying to comments, or they're always answering questions, or, you know, they're adding so much value into the community, it kind of takes away from potentially the value of their other offers. Like maybe they have a mastermind and, you know, or maybe there's one-on-one coaching. And so you want to be really careful and make sure that your community isn't sort of cannibalizing your other offers. Because when, you know, if you sign up for a course, you're getting access to maybe live trainings from that person, the course material, and then like the community is generally a bonus. So it's a Facebook community bonus. And so if suddenly the host is in there all the time, answering your questions, basically providing almost like one-on-one support, your customer is going to think, well, I don't need to sign up for, you know, a higher level support because I'm getting it from the community. So there's definitely a balance. Like you want to make sure that you're balancing out what you're providing in the community. So for example, you might say, like, it sounds like, you know, in your community, you do live training. So maybe that's the way you show up for people, but maybe you don't reply to comments directly all the time. Or you might choose, say, like,
well, it's not even close to that, actually. Here's the interesting thing. In both my communities,
yeah,
people can have private coaching from me in their own thread. It's not just a once a month training. Sure, we have that.
Right.
In the higher level community, there's once a week group calls. But both communities have personal private coaching with me. And I've found it not to cannibalize the higher level offering in any way, even though there's such a massive price gap. You jump from $1,300 a year to $18,000 a year. And there are other elements to the offer. But the thing that is the same in both is me showing up every day, basically. So mm-hmm. I've found that in the field, testing that, it hasn't been an issue. So what I think you've hit on there that's very important is, in my case, my membership is the product.
Right.
And in these other scenarios, they've got some flagship course or a one-time purchase for multi-thousands of dollars.
Exactly.
And then that's it. So they have to have other products and services to keep that income coming. So I'd say they have a different business model.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Yeah.
And yes, I could see how if they're serving their customer as a tail for their one-time product, then I'd say maybe their business model is different. And it doesn't sound like it's a great one for some of these people, especially if they've handed over a huge chunk of their launch money back to affiliates, refunds and copywriters and JV managers and all the rest of it. And now they've stuck with a Facebook group to answer questions until the next big launch. That would suck.
Well, I would say it depends on, well, it sounds like what you're offering in your community is more of like a community in the form of coaching. It's not peer-to-peer like support. So for example, when it's...
No. It's got peer-to-peer,
yeah,
and it has information as well. It's really, if you were to, if you describe it, I'd say there's three pillars. There's content, there's community, and there's coaching. So I think getting the balance right is important. And I think when you're talking about Facebook groups, that puts a heavy emphasis on community because it's much harder to organize content and it's probably not the greatest place to coach people. So it is fascinating. That's why I really wanted to talk to you and find out how the other world lives and what sort of challenges they're having. So you mentioned something before about having community managers.
Yep.
It sounds like people are hiring people to come and do the rounds and moderate and keep people engaged. And I'd love to know, what would you call an engagement and how do you measure the effectiveness of it?
I'm sorry, I just missed the last part of what you just asked.
What do you classify as engagement and how do you measure the effectiveness of it?
So I would say, like, what we're looking for in a course-based community is having people, you know, engaging in terms of asking questions, getting support, and reaching out on a regular basis. So for example, you know, you can sort of check in with people and make sure that they're using the course material or that they're moving forward with what the specific course is working on. So for example, one way that you can check in with people is you can have, say, a weekly thread where people are sort of checking in on what they're working on that week, what they're applying from the course material. And then later in the week, you sort of check in with those people again and you can say, okay, you know, how did that go? And what could you do differently? And what are you going to be working on next week? Or what sort of roadblocks that came up. And in terms of Facebook, it can be messy in a sense that, you know, Facebook is focusing on, it's not like a forum setup. So for example, like some people will set up their communities on, say, Slack. So you can sort of change and you can have like set channels. So it's like, imagine if you have different modules of your course, you can have a separate channel for each one. So the discussion is focused and sort of in one place. But with Facebook, it's more about like who recently posted or who recently commented and is sort of pushing up on the wall. And so one way you can kind of combat that and sort of work around it is in Facebook, they have the document section. And so, you know, what I recommend people doing is having sort of a roadmap to your course, your program. So what you can do is you can actually, generally speaking, what people will do is they have specific posts that they're going to post throughout like the live program that's coming out. And so then what they'll do is you can actually add links to those posts in one document. So it's kind of like a roadmap that's going to make it easier for people to navigate Facebook. So it's kind of like still using Facebook the way it was made, but then it makes it a little bit easier to kind of stay on track of things and think, okay, so what was happening for week one of the course? And you can go to those main sort of threads and check in. It also depends, like in terms of engagement, we're generally looking for making sure that people are actually like checking in, that they're commenting, that they're sort of engaging with other people as well. Generally speaking, when someone's taking an online course, if they're doing it themselves, and maybe they get stuck and they don't really have somebody else to reach out to, generally they'll just stop. Like they'll just stop using the material. And so with a community, depending on how you have it set up, like if maybe you have a higher level, like there's a coaching element of it, for example, you can post a question and have it answered by a coach. Or if it's more of a peer-to-peer sort of support system, then people can reach out and they can post and get insights from other people that have either gone through the program already, or it's even just people that are kind of in it at that moment. So it's a little bit more like they can support each other and get some ideas from people that have maybe done that in the past.
Very interesting. Thank you. You mentioned Slack and we're obviously talking about Facebook here.
Yeah.
I expect Facebook's probably very good at calling people up and getting people to come back in because it's most likely they're using an app on their phone and they're probably the world's best at keeping people
yep.
hooked onto the device. Have you seen people be successful with Slack?
Yeah, there's actually one of my good friends, Primoz Bajic, he has a course helping people write ultimate guides for their businesses and he uses Slack for his community. And so his course is live. It's a year-long program. And he basically did what I kind of explained before. So he has all the different modules. They're set up. So there's a channel. They're called channels in Slack. So there's a channel for each module. And all of the questions, they go into like the separate channels. And then he also has additional channels for, you know, sharing your wins, maybe just like a water cooler. So if people just want to chat or share funny things, kind of connect just on a human level. And then so what he does is he can go through and, you know, people ask a question and he can, what's nice about Slack, actually, one of the added benefits too, is that you can, it's got threaded conversations. You can have, you know, the channel that's separated. So it's focused on, say, one type of question, but then also each person is getting feedback on that thread. So it's sort of contained. So, you know, someone can ask a question and he can jump in and he can provide some insights. And what's nice about Slack as well, like you can share video or audio or just a written text as well. So it gives you some flexibility in terms of giving different types of feedback. But that has been really successful in terms of the like the results that his students are getting and also the just the feel that you get when you're working through that live course. And I think that what's interesting as well, like when you are building a community for a course, I think there's different types of communities. There's like a community that's just a community in the sense of connecting with people over like one topic, you know, like, so for example, if there was like a community about surfing, right? So like that you're just connecting about that sport or that experience. But I think that with businesses, community is, we're trying to tap into that sort of human connection, but using it in a way to either get people results, like when there's some sort of coaching that's involved, or even just getting them results from like a course that somebody is working through. So it's this idea of trying to help people, like it's basically combating some of the negative emotions that we want to avoid. So like when people feel a little bit overwhelmed, or they're, you know, confused about something, or they feel like maybe, you know, like mindset kind of gets in there and they feel like they're not good enough to do something, so that they have this place where they can go and talk to people that they know are sort of sharing that same experience as them, you know, so that they can get that support. And then especially, you know, in the case of Primož Bajic, like he's the leader, he's the coach, he's coming in and he's providing that support so that people can really kind of keep moving forward, and so that people can get success from the program. I think that's something that's really important as well. There's different types of programs. So like there are some businesses that, you know, will create a program and they create a community and then they don't really do anything with the community. There's not really much in terms of moderation. It's just sort of there. It's like this, you know, a token community. And, you know, I feel like it's a mistake. You know, it's almost worse to have a community that isn't really sort of moderated and, I guess, controlled in terms of quality. I would much rather actually not have a community than have one that's kind of sort of poorly managed and not really taken care of.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. It's something I've seen prolificated with the advent of the launch model. And it's kind of what I was referring to before, where people slap that group onto the side.
Yeah.
You know, I've been curious with Facebook. To me, it seems like the last place I would send someone to reduce overwhelm. Because whatever they're going there for, they're going to be stuck there for quite some time. Yeah. I've deliberately kept off Facebook for 9 years so far. I've resisted the temptation for my community, which is on a privately hosted, threaded forum environment, which is really good for laying out products and really good for having discussions. And with the use of an app, we can still get people to it easily. What do you think the downsides of Facebook are for hosting a community?
Well, I would say that like you're hitting the nail on the head in terms of like, it's sort of like noise. So it is designed, like, I mean, like we said this, I think you mentioned this earlier, like Facebook is designed to keep you there. Like, you know, it's sticky, right? Like they want you to stay there. They want you to, you know, go in to see one thing and then click on something else and click on something else. And so I think that, you know, that probably one of the drawbacks in terms of like, I guess, distraction. So it's like you're sort of trying to provide structure. So for example, with that roadmap document, you're providing that structure, but you're also sort of fighting the distraction. So you're trying to keep people focused. And I would say that would be probably the main drawback. And I think that the other is the fact that like you can't structure it like a forum. So for example, like with Slack, you can have separate sort of rooms for people to talk about certain things. I would say actually that would probably be the biggest frustration or drawback, just because it is sort of this continuous conversation on the wall that's ever moving. I think it also depends on your members. So I feel like if you have clients that are, like, for example, like the difference between like somebody who's just starting out as an entrepreneur versus someone who's running like a 7-figure business, the mindset of somebody at like those different levels is very different. And so if somebody wants to get help with running their 7-figure business, they're going to actively go into a community. They're not going to need much in terms of like trying to like encouraging them to go in. It's like, hey, I need help. I need coaching. I need advice. They're going to go in. Whereas with someone who's maybe starting out, there can be this sort of resistance. And it's a lot to do with mindset. Like we find that, you know, when people are working through programs, they get really excited at the beginning and then they might hit a wall, like they get stuck with something. And then so they just stop. And so that's where I think Facebook is sort of continuously pulling people back in. And I guess there's also that element of like you're seeing other people and their profiles. So it adds a little bit more of a human effect to it. I'm not really sure how that's established in a forum. Like, I mean, maybe they have a photo or this sort of thing and maybe a profile. But with Facebook, it feels like you can sort of connect with people, even though it is like social media connection. But yeah, I would say that those are probably the two main things that would kind of be drawbacks or things that you're going to have to find ways to work around is the forum or the lack of forum. And the fact that it is like it's sticky, it's this distraction sometimes.
Yeah, I think Facebook's very good for the profiles. And obviously, you can click on people and see more about them and get involved with their life. In most forum software, you get a picture and maybe a bio. And another advantage of Facebook, I think, is that it's quite easy to set up and accessible. There are some customers I have where I would say Facebook's probably a good fit for them. If they have a very unsophisticated buyer, they might not even be able to figure out Slack or Zenfora or whatever other platform.
Yeah.
Just might be too technical. So Facebook's easy for certain customer types and it lends itself to that. So it's really fascinating to see what the pros and cons are. Would you say that most of the people who you're helping with community strategy are starting out with a Facebook membership group of some kind?
Yeah, generally speaking, like if they're offering some sort of form of community or community in addition to a course, the default is Facebook. It's exactly like what you said. It's easy. There is the argument that because everyone's there, I'm not sure if that stands true in the sense like not necessarily everyone's there. Also, people are starting to sort of not resist Facebook, but I know that a lot of people are maybe, you know, sort of regimenting their use of Facebook or social media in general. So that's something to kind of keep in mind as well. But I would say that in terms of, you know, providing value to their clients in a place where they know how to use, like you said, it's quite simple to kind of set up and people kind of know how to navigate it. I think that the cost of actually using another platform and then also trying to make sure that people use the platform. I know that, for example, for myself, like I've taken courses for community management, like with community strategy, and the course community wasn't on Facebook. It was in this other sort of platform, I guess. And what I found was as I did the course, I asked a couple of questions in the community, but as soon as the course was done, I never went back to the community. Whereas with programs that I've done, say on Facebook and even in Slack, when the course is over, there's still like a desire to still connect with those people because you connect with real people, right? Like you form some friendships, you know, with other people that you're working with, and you might meet a couple of people. You might even like go to the next level. It might be part of the program to actually meet some of these people in person, which is dependent on obviously like people in the group or if that's something that the host is, you know, wants to organize. But yeah, I think that it's definitely like a default. A lot of people are just like, okay, so I'm going to set up a course. I'm going to create, you know, this. And then it's kind of like, well, how am I going to approach the community? And like you said, like Facebook is easy.
Yeah, I think it offers low resistance for the product owners. A lot of product owners are struggling with the technology.
Yep.
They got all these other things on their mind, like how to recoup the costs of their coaches, how to deploy the program they've purchased, how to get the sales copy working, how to deal with their customers and technology stack and so much going on that can offer them an easy path to get into the market as well. So let's talk about the community manager. How do you get one? And you said something about paying them or being able to afford them. What sort of arrangements would be in place?
So with community managers, generally what I would recommend, like if you have a community and you're looking to sort of outsource or not be sort of managing the community, like you want someone to be taking care of it for you, whereas you'll still be providing like your coaching and support and have your role in the community, but having somebody that's there and sort of focusing on that. One of the things that I highly recommend is hiring somebody that actually is already in the community. So sometimes now it depends on now this, it would depend on your clients as well. So the people that I'm working with, it's usually it's like a course community. And so they have people that's like taking a course and working through the community as well. But for example, like the way that Ramit Sethi hired me to be the community manager for his course and his coaching program was because I was a student. And what happened was, is I joined one of his programs and then I joined this additional sort of coaching program called Accelerator. And what happened was, is I inherently love helping people. And so whenever I join a community, I just support other people and I like helping people, answering questions, and then using things that I'm good at. So for example, like proofreading things or providing support just in like as a friend, this sort of thing. And so I basically started doing that and the company noticed. And so, you know, they brought me on as the community manager. And the thing when you do that is like the added benefit, like if you do have a community with a course and you hire a community manager that has taken your course, that understands like the values of your community and is already a part of it, it's much easier to, say, get them trained like on the strategy side of things or just creating systems for them rather than, say, hiring somebody that maybe is trained as a community manager, but they don't understand your course. They don't understand really the values of your company. And so it can be a really good opportunity to kind of use the people that you're already surrounded by and see if there's somebody in there that potentially could be a good fit for that role. But I think that in terms of like hiring a community manager, I mean, in terms of cost, like some people, what they'll do is between a community manager, if you don't have the budget to fully hire like a community manager, what some people will do in between is they'll have sort of say like student mentors or ambassadors for the community. And that's where you reach out to say a member of the community that is highly active and highly engaged. And you can sort of, maybe you can offer them some sort of perk or benefit to being like an extra set of eyes and supporting other people in the community or looking out for posts. Like I know that in some communities, like we're looking out for things like, you know, self-promotion or things that just don't really fall in line with the values of the company. So like having some extra set of eyes to support you doing that can be really useful. And it can sort of be a bridge between doing everything yourself and then, you know, making that step to have a community manager come in and take care of it for you.
Yeah. And I think to some extent you can recruit the whole community to represent the cause. So they seem to help people get back into shape fairly quickly if they step out of line, I've noticed.
Yeah, that's a really good point about setting expectations. Like one of the things you really need to be very clear on, I mean, if it's in Facebook or Slack, it doesn't matter, but like having very clear guidelines about what is and isn't acceptable in your community. Because if you, like a lot of people, what they'll do, like probably one of the biggest mistakes people make is they don't have guidelines. So they're like, yeah, come on in and engage and help each other, but they don't tell people what isn't okay. And so then that's when there's this gray area of, well, I'm not sure if this is okay or not, but I'm just going to do it anyway. And, you know, it really opens up things to like people being maybe self-promotional, maybe even just people being not very nice or a little bit rude to other people, like just sort of, you know, not watching your tone or this sort of thing when you're talking to other people. And I think that's so important. Like if you can establish, like set guidelines right from the beginning and you get everybody on board, like you said, like everyone's going to be, it's like a group of people. It's like a tribe. It's like, hey, this is the herd and you're doing something that isn't really in line with what is okay here. So you need to change or, you know, get out basically. So that's such a good point, is really setting those guidelines in place in the beginning to make sure that it's not you, like you and your team against, you know, these members. It's like everybody is working together. Like everybody wants to have this, you know, one place that, you know, everybody feels supported. And actually this is like, that would probably be the last thing too, is, you know, knowing what emotion your members want to feel in your community is the number one thing that people need to know. Like you as a host and also as a community manager, if you don't understand like the emotions that they want to feel and don't want to feel, because that's actually what, like in terms of strategy, like for community, emotions is the strategy. So for example, like if you know that everybody in your group wants to feel proud or they want to feel supported or inspired or elite or whatever that emotion is, you then take that emotion and you trigger it in every aspect of the community. And so that includes the images you use. It includes like the messages you send to people. It includes, you know, like the welcome post, the group description, even like the cover image at the top, if it's on Facebook, you know, making sure that you trigger the right emotions and also like limit the negative emotions they want to feel. That in and of itself can really change a community.
That's a killer tip, emotion. I like that.
Yeah.
I've often thought of running a community as like being a parent.
Yes. It's oh my God, yes.
Had these communities for, I mean, haven't had them as long as I've had kids, but it's like they're constantly changing, they're pushing the boundaries, you know, it's like different hormones arrive, you know, different members have different strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes they test you, push you to the limits. Do you ever delete stuff?
Yes. Actually, yes. That's the thing too. Like, so what I do, like helping with community managers is, you know, creating sort of like a community playbook for them and their company. So knowing how to react in certain situations. So when do you delete something? When do you private message versus publicly message? And that's actually a really good point as well. Like, don't be afraid to sometimes trigger the negative emotions a little bit. So for example, if somebody posts something and it's, you know, breaking a guideline, like maybe you have a way that you're supposed to post, like a specific title or something like that. When you publicly say, hey, like, thanks so much for reaching out in the community. Can you just change this one thing? Or can you update your post to, you know, include XYZ information? what you're doing is you're telling that person like, hey, like you need to change this, but you're also sending a message to everybody else that A, this is how we do things here, but also that like we care about the community and we're taking care of it. Like, so everybody else knows like, yeah, like I post the right way or I'm doing things like XYZ way. But knowing that balance, and I think that that's sometimes a challenge for a lot of community managers or even hosts of community, is knowing like, when should I delete stuff? When should I send a private message? When should I post publicly? And really that just comes down to experience and looking at each situation, the context of it, and thinking about how is that person going to feel and which is probably going to be the best way to deal with that situation. Because it really does, it just all boils down to emotions.
Yes. Yeah, I think you need to have a high emotional quotient if you're going to be corralling people. And I also agree, you've got a duty of care to these people. Yep. You have to create a safe place. And if you don't have guidelines, you could actually be risking your business, your reputation, could potentially be liability. So I think it's wise to have guidelines. And maybe even if it's a serious business, maybe run it past someone of a legal
yep.
nature. I think that, you know, you have policies around who owns the content. I mean, that's one thing with Facebook. I think since the data breach, there has been a bit of sensitivity yeah. around what people are putting there. Have you seen people react to that? Are they moving off site at this point? Are they concerned about where their members' data is going?
I mean, right now, I haven't noticed anybody, like nobody's really brought it up in terms of like asking me in turn, like if they're concerned about it or what should we be doing differently. Actually, nobody said anything. It seems like
too hard.
Yeah, like just no, like they're not really concerned about it, I guess. But I think in terms of students, I think, or members of communities, it depends on the type of person. Some people are a little bit more concerned about it. Some people aren't. And that actually sometimes can be an issue. Like if your target audience, like if your members don't like Facebook, like don't make a Facebook group for them because they're not going to be comfortable on it. Like you need to find, you know, you really need to find a platform that works for, you know, where they are and what they're comfortable with.
Imagine that, focusing on a customer.
I know, right? Customer first.
Who would have thought? What's one of the all-time classic fails you've seen, like a meltdown, a failure, a closure, something didn't work? What lessons did that produce that you could share with us?
Well, I think that like, so one that I knew about, I didn't run the community or I wasn't really involved in it, but Ramit Sethi's RBT, so Ramit's Brain Trust, it was a community and it was-
Oh, I think he did a public post about a forum-
He did.
That he closed. So
why he closed down.
So I don't think that's a secret.
Exactly. Yeah.
I actually did a whole training around that topic of churn, because I think with a subscription business, churn is very, very important, like keeping people getting a result, all the things we've talked about here, actually. And his post inspired me to make that topic because it's, you know, I think his churn reached such a high level.
Yep.
That it wasn't profitable anymore.
Exactly. And I think-
What happened?
I mean, I think that they were focusing on maybe the wrong thing. So for example, there was, you know, it was interviews and videos, like very high quality, you know, interviews with different interesting people. And so that Ramit would sit down with them. And what happened was, is they were focusing, or I believe is that they were focusing on that and sort of investing in the videos when it was the community that sort of was bringing people together. But it's sort of they weren't putting attention, I think, on what the people wanted in terms of like the community and how to grow the community out. And so then when they were looking at the numbers, it just, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, and I believe he even says in the post, like it was a really hard decision, but the numbers were sort of just showing like this is what needed to be done. So I think in terms of learning for other people, you know, really taking a look at your numbers and making sure that, you know, maybe you really enjoy a community or you think that it's, you know, providing value to people, but, you know, make sure like just because you have people coming into your community or your subscription doesn't mean that it's working. Like you need to make like see like how long are they staying and, you know, are they getting value from it? And if not, then maybe it's something that you need to either, you know, dig into more or you need to pull the plug.
Yeah. It's definitely worth researching your audience. I found a lot of value in meeting my customers a lot. Over the last 9 years, I've been to a stack of meetups like hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And I did a very comprehensive research to end up with different categories. And now we've used those categories, everything from attracting customers to the onboarding material they get will be segmented to their needs. So I think that's a really intuitive thing to do. And yeah, people probably don't value the content as much as the community.
Yeah.
They might come in for content, but I think they stay for community is what I've found.
Yeah, that seems like, I think there's, somebody has said that. It's like you come for the content, but you stay for the community. And it really is true. It's like, it's the relationships. It's the way you feel, right? It's the emotions that you are feeling being involved with a certain group of people that are working towards a certain goal. And so as community host or facilitator, it's, you know, it's our job to make sure that they're feeling A, the way they want to, and limiting the other emotions, like, you know, feeling excluded or feeling stupid or feeling alone, like making sure that that's minimized.
Diana, it's very interesting talking to you. I've got stacks more things I'd like to ask you. I was going to ask you about health checking your community, seeing, you know, how you can find out if you're on track with them or not. And I'd love to ask you things about onboarding and attracting people to the community and other things. Maybe we'll have to have another session if you'll come back and talk about those things.
Yeah.
For now, though.
Definitely. I think that.
Gosh, the big tip here is emotion. That's a winning tip. And choosing the right platform for your audience. And maybe we've put some contrarian points of view there. And I'll certainly, as the non-Facebook guy, I've seen some really strong evidence that you can still do things that the market isn't doing and go just fine. And it's great to get someone from the Facebook side of things talking about best practice for membership groups, especially if you've been publishing a course and you have a group. You can't just slap it on the side. You've got to put some effort and thought into it and plan it properly with the, you know, proper community management and guidelines and setting the tone. So, Diana, thank you so much for joining us. People can find out more about you at dianatower.com, and I'm sure you can assist people if they're interested in learning about community strategy and coordination of managers, etc.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Great. All right. Well, you've been listening to Superfast Business. This was episode 585, all about community strategy, and I was chatting with Diana Tower, and I think we're going to have her back for another session.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.